Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to the Inclusive Class Podcast. Through interviews and discussions, it's our goal to explore the promise and practice of inclusive education. I'm Nicole Erdix, and I'm one of your hosts for the show. I'm a parent, inclusion teacher, and creator of the online resource, theinclusiveclass.com. And here with me this morning is my co-host, Terry Morrow. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, Nicole, and welcome to all our listeners. I am Terry Morrow. I'm the author of 50 Ways to Support Your Child's Special Education, and I write about special needs for about.com at specialchildren.about.com. I'd like to mention to anybody out there listening to us live that we're not taking phone calls, but I will open up the chat room if you'd like to stop in and suggest a question. I'll try to work it in if we have time. We're still in the middle of winter break time here at our house.
Wow.
It's drawing to an end. Andrew goes back on Tuesday to classes, and I go back to supervising homework and panicking about every little thing. Meanwhile, my daughter is busy filling out job applications for the very topic that we're talking about today, paraprofessionals.
Right.
So I've told her
yeah.
she should listen today so
yeah.
she'll find out what it is she
Good
is applying to do. But, you know, it was interesting, as I was talking to you about a little bit before we started. Yesterday we went to the funeral for a cousin of my husband, who is a woman with cerebral palsy, an elderly woman, and, you know, had really gone through, you know, so much stuff in her life without all the accommodations and the inclusion that we have now. I don't really know much about her young life, but, you know, she worked in an office in New York for, you know, most of her life and her adult life. And it really,
wow.
you know, made me think about what, how much easier I think it is now for our children with disabilities, what they're looking ahead to, and what, you know, what accommodations. Certainly not perfect, as we will all complain about every day,
right,
and
right.
often on this telecast, the imperfections, but the distance that we've come from what this woman must have dealt with in her early life and her professional life. So, you know, it's got me thinking about how good we really do have it now, even though
yeah.
there's still
yeah.
always room for improvement and always things that will outrage us that are not right. But,
exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, so
that's great.
I'm, you know, feeling happy and grateful for what we do have now.
Mm-hmm.
And
it makes you realize how good we
yeah.
have it at points. You know, yeah, like
that's
you said,
right.
there's always room for improvement, but
always,
when
yes.
you look at... Yeah, look at where she was at and where we're at now.
Yeah,
two
and even
totally
I was talking to another cousin who had, you know, who has children now who are probably in their 30s and 40s, who had learning disabilities, and she said, you know, at the time she was trying
mm-hmm.
to advocate for her kids, there was just no knowledge and there was no way to connect with other parents and there was no,
mm-hmm.
there were no books, you know, and you had to really
yeah, yeah.
just hope
yeah,
that
definitely.
The people who were working with your kids knew what they were doing, and now she's so impressed that there's websites and there's mailing lists and there's all these ways for communication. So even though
yeah.
I think many of us often feel like it's hard to ignore all the things that are wrong, you know, it's a good to think about the things that are so very much easier than they used to
yes.
be for parents and for
one of them,
adults as well.
One of them
yes.
being the addition of paraprofessionals to our
absolutely
school
yes.
to support our
I have
students
been
with
very grateful.
Needs. Yeah,
those,
I know
those workers through my children's
you,
school time.
You've had experiences with paraeducators as a
quite
parent
a lot, yes.
And I've had them as a teacher, and wow, they can sure make a difference when
yeah,
they
either way.
Are. Yes,
I was just going to say
they
either
can
way.
Make
or break. Yes.
Yeah,
and
yeah. But, you know, so much to talk about in terms of having a paraeducator in the classroom and what their role is and,
mm-hmm.
you know, what they can be doing, what they should be doing.
Right.
And I'm so grateful that we have our guest with us here today who is very knowledgeable on the topic of inclusive education and paraeducators or paraprofessionals, as we call them, in the classroom, and I would like to introduce Dr. Ashley Malloy, who is here with us today, and he has quite an extensive background in inclusive education, as well as currently very busy traveling the world and attending conferences and sharing his knowledge and his expertise. And I'd like to welcome to the show. Good morning, Dr. Malloy.
Good morning to both of you. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm looking forward to having a chance to share with your audience some past experiences I've had and some knowledge that provide them with invigorated hope.
Yes, definitely.
Does work.
Yeah. Dr. Malloy, before we get going, actually people usually call you Dr. Ash, is that correct? I would just want to make sure.
Yeah, everyone just calls me Dr. Ash, so that's much more comfortable for me. So thank you for making that.
Yeah, well, easier too to say. Can you quickly give the audience a bit of background about yourself before we start with our questions, just so that we know what, you know, where you're coming from and sort of a quick overview of your experience?
Yeah, I can do that very quickly. Basically, whenever I'm there, Terry and Nicole, I speak from basically what I call four different hats. The first hat is obviously academic researcher and professor at university, so therefore I'm always researching new data, compiling new data, and certainly with a focus obviously on inclusion. Also on basically inclusion for one is inclusion for all, so I like to kind of... Therefore, the second one would be advocate. I very strongly advocate for level playing field where all children have access. Third of all, I'm a past superintendent of education, worldwide educator. I'm working with teachers, putting my philosophy practical terms within my classroom. That role, and finally, perhaps most important of all, Down syndrome, and I say she was gifted with Down syndrome. So I've also had the parent side of the desk in schools as well as the they're the four kind of experiences that I bring to my work, and I travel around the world, heading down, as a matter of fact, to Florida next week. I am a keynote speaker and presenter, and
excuse me, Dr. Ash, are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
we're here. We're having a bit of difficulty hearing. You seem to be going in and out on our phone line here. So, in case anybody's listening, it's not just you. So,
okay. I'm on a landline to make sure that there was the best possible reception. So, want me to repeat anything, or did everybody hear a little bit about it? Or
I think we caught
really
going things.
Yeah. Is it possible
well,
for you to
I have
hang
four
up and try calling
I'll
in
just
again?
Briefly, I'm not going to speak as a researcher in terms of data and research, keeping up in terms of teaching classes at the university level on special education. I'm an advocate, continuing to serve on many, many boards that advocate for inclusive practices. Third of all, as an educator, former principal and board-wide administrator, working with students of all kinds, with all special needs, different kinds of special needs. And finally, last but not least, I'm the parent of Lindsay Sarah Malloy, my daughter who was born with Down syndrome. So they're the four experiences I bring to my role and my career.
Right. Thank you. Okay. And that's a much better reception, or, you know, we can hear you a lot better. So thank you for clarifying that with us. Because now I'd like to ask you, a very important question to start our show with, and that's one that many people have a lot of opinions about, thoughts about, knowledge. Can you provide us with a definition of what a paraeducator or paraprofessional is and what their role is, what their, I guess maybe more what their relationship is with the classroom teacher? Like, why are there two adults in the classroom? We know the role of the teacher. What is the paraeducator there to do?
Well, I like the simple quote as follows. I see the paraprofessional as a guide on the side, and a phrase I
okay.
use. Now, basically, teacher has determined specific criteria in terms of his or her job description to compile the content, to teach the content. Paraprofessional is there to implement, as directed by the teacher, some of the methodology, some of the strategies to assist that student assessing the knowledge of the Common Core curriculum, of the different skills that are necessary for that boy or girl to be successful. There has to be, so that's number one. So the role is that he or she is a paraprofessional, meaning working side by side, as we do with a paralegal,
mm-hmm.
with the nurse working side by side in the operating room with a doctor. So it is a person who provides support for the learning environment of the student or students that he or she is assigned to. That's number one. Second thing is, understand that the paraprofessional does spend full amount of time, in addition to the teacher, with the student. So it is a shared responsibility. I think that what we have to note is that each of them in this partnership, and it needs to be a cooperative partnership where we respect both roles. So the teachers who have worked with paras, certainly as Terry has indicated, know value of the work that they provide and know value that they have in terms of helping the teacher move
mm-hmm.
the student forward to success. So they are an essential component of the educational programming for students with special education needs, and they bring that dignity to that student because they have a special insight and care for that student because of the inordinate amount of time that they interact with him or her.
I completely agree, and I appreciate you pointing out the value that they are to not only the student but to the teacher, because often the teacher doesn't fully understand the para's role as well, and there can be a real power struggle in the classroom or, you know, between the parents and the teacher as to who is designing the curriculum, who's implementing it. And it just, you know, sometimes there just seems to be a real imbalance of, you know, knowledge and who's doing what. And so I really appreciate you bringing up that part of it, too, because we know how important they are to the student, but also to the teacher and to the classroom as a whole. So that's great.
Yeah, I think, now, Nicole, you know, and Terry, I think that clarity is key. I think that,
yes.
For example, when a para is going to be assigned, it's important that the principal would ensure that he or she sits down with them early part of that meeting with the teacher and para, kind of guide the discussion. Because, again, I think that we have to inform both parties. They are clear from the principal's role what he or she expects of them and what is designated in terms of their role. I think that there is a kind of a facilitator of that discussion. I think it's very important because I think everybody is excited understanding of relationship. Because, you know, Nicole, Terry, I always say that the top three R's in education are no longer just reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Mm-hmm.
Relationship, relationship, relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Right.
That's at the adult level as well as at the... So I think clarity of full definitions is important. And the fact that collaboration is part of today's world, whether it's education or business or social. People, we need dependent on each other for certain things because we created our society of human beings that together and need to be collaborating successful. So the win-win situation when both of them are clear functioning in their roles, and the win-win for them, of course, is the success
of the student, I think, is probably the most important outcome here, would you say?
Yes, and I will say that in my own experience, I'm thinking of the paraprofessional that I've worked with, that daughter has had the privilege of working with, I should say, mm-hmm. they were very much an advocate and very much saw the activities in the school, curriculum, as well as the social and curricular activities, always through the eyes of the student, my daughter in the case. And, for example, they advocated that she would be on getting in the house league school teams that were, and all the different kinds of activities. But, you know, both of them, and she, most of them were female parents, but they advocated for my daughter, and they kind of brought the fact that Lindsay belonged with everybody else.
Right. And I think
enjoyed
that's
basketball,
sort of...
and, you know, and that's the dignity of the human person must always be our first focus.
And I think that sort of leads into our next question. Oh, sorry, Terry, did you have something to say?
Or? No, it's okay. I was just saying it's often a paraprofessional has to make themselves available to make those things happen. You know, there has to be, if they're going to be mm-hmm. on a club or a team or something like that, often a para saying, I will do this, is what makes that happen. And it's hard for parents to get that to happen, but so, yes, it's always just, you know, so much gratitude to, you know, paras who take that extra step and dedicate themselves to getting the child as fully included as possible. It's a great thing.
Definitely. Now, what about in terms of, and you sort of started to elaborate on it in the previous question, but can you further describe the relationship then between the paraeducator and the student, or in some cases, and I know that the school district that I worked in, some cases the paraeducator actually was working with several students in the classroom, so there was kind of a small group. I mean, so for me or from my experience and background, a paraeducator can either be working one-on-one with a student or can be working with a small group of students, I guess depending on the needs of the school and the expectations of the district and, of course, the need in the classroom. So can you describe sort of the relationship and what the role is between the paraeducator and the student?
Yeah, I think you've identified it there clearly. The principal would look at distribution and assignment of staff in his or her school, and basically things that would come into would be obviously IEP of the student in terms of the identified needs, the required accommodations that is outlined in that IEP.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, he or she would look at the staff and what he or she audited under that first aspect, and then would make the determination in the leadership role, place the para working with one student, two students, a couple of students. Originally, the para is assigned to a classroom responsibilities
right.
for para is assigned to a classroom, and the role of the para, of course, could be part of a particularly high need student or working with a couple of students on something like remedial reading. So para has a very wide range of roles. So when we, center at the National Resource Center, the National Para Conference, which is and I always find that talk about the paras, their roles might be working with an ESL support, for example, with special needs, identified needs such as autism or Asperger's or physical or cerebral or emotional, whatever. So they have a variety of functions. So the role of the para, therefore, is very diverse. The thing that we don't want to do is paras are working help their students become as independent as possible or move them towards independence. So that might be very, very slow rate.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay, as depending on the needs of the student. Para is trying to make sure that he or she does not become Velcroed to the student, because that is not the ultimate end, because eventually the student will leave a fully provided public education system. Don't mm-hmm. provide for her with the best skills possible to be as independent as possible. We're not trying to or overdo their needs, but do want them to be somewhat independent, provide some social interaction with their peers, as opposed to having the para always present. Para, again, is to ensure that the para takes the lead in that. How But then training is required, Nicole. The paras need to have professional development. This conference every year I've been at, it's called the NRC Para Conference. There are paras there benefit from being with each other, first of all, and from getting some very good professional development strategy. You need to train them learning the same as we do with our teachers.
Oh, I hope we haven't lost them.
I'm still here.
Oh, okay.
Hello.
Okay.
Okay.
You keep disappearing for a little while.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know what that is.
We'll try and fill in the gaps.
I'm basically eating the microphone, but I will try to see if I can swallow a little bit more.
Thank you. You know, in this world, you never know what's going to happen with technology. So
right.
we roll with it. Okay.
That's right.
Right.
I too.
Right. Yeah. Terry, did you have a question for Dr.
Yeah,
Ash?
Well, I think some of the questions I had have been answered already, but let me ask one that I know is always an issue. My son had a one-on-one paraprofessional pretty much all through school, which was mostly good, occasionally bad, but one issue that continued to come up was the one of communication between the paraprofessional and the parents. Some years I was able to send notes to the para, I was able to chat with the para when I picked my son up, there was no problem. Other years I was told I was not allowed to contact the para at all, that she could get fired for sending me a note, that everything had to go through the teacher or the principal. So it's like, you know, it depends on, I guess, the teacher and the administration and what's going on politically in the school that year and how much a pain in the butt people feel I've been being. but is there some what do you feel is appropriate in terms of communication between the para and the parent?
Well, I think, first of all, obviously there are rules and regulations with regards to teaching unions,
mm-hmm.
so therefore they have a particular outline of, and I think that the districts do want to, in accordance with those understandings in the labor relations functioning,
mm-hmm.
But
right.
I think that, example, therefore you're going to get different things. You move from one district to another area, and again, all
mm-hmm.
of a sudden, have the same. So,
this
the principal
like
and superintendent, of course,
same...
will look at the big picture, and certainly the labor relationship contracts and obligations would be considered. But I think more importantly, I have always asked for a book.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I do need communication, because as we know, Terry,
right.
many students
yeah.
do not have the verbal opportunity
yeah.
to be able to share, well,
exactly
how was your
it.
Day, son or daughter? So therefore,
mm-hmm.
the parents like to know, which is as equal contributors to the education system, they are the first educators of their children. That is a fact. And therefore,
mm-hmm.
in terms of a
right.
partnership, we need to understand that both one thing that teachers and parents have in mind is they want the best for their son or daughter. And therefore, they need
right.
to work together. And part of that working together is that relationship building through communication. So, for example,
mm-hmm.
I know that paras have something to contribute. So I'm saying, okay, even if the
yeah.
note comes home from the teacher, okay, the para
yeah.
certainly has some input and has some observations to be able to share that are certainly
right.
legitimate and helpful. So I think it's a matter of, you know, again, back to that role responsibility, that would have to be determined right at the beginning, I think, and then that has
yeah.
to be conveyed to the parents. So the parents aren't, well, gee, I hope Mrs. Brown, my para, is going to send me something. Meanwhile, maybe
yeah.
it's already been determined that it's not possible. So I think that's part of the groundwork
right.
that needs to be made right at the beginning.
Yeah, that's a good thing for parents to establish if you, like, go to back to school night or can have a meeting with your child's teacher early in the school year. You know, ask about that. Say, is there some informal way that we could just, you know, exchange notes or have a communication book or, you know, get messages through? Because sometimes there's even very minor things can be useful to communicate, you know, things that you want people to keep an eye on or things that the paras found work in class and try this with the homework. And it helps so much in a year if you can have that communication. But it does need to be set up in a way that everybody's comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and
I think that
a
meet the teacher night, you know, when they have the open house at the beginning of
mm-hmm.
the year and, you know, the parents are invited
yeah.
to come and meet I always encouraged my teachers that para is part of team.
Yeah.
Therefore, the dignity of accorded to member, he would or he would be side by side with the teacher, be introduced, and the role mm-hmm. the parents, simply, just the general role that Mrs. Brown is working to help some of our students with their learning who require assistance. You know, just paying tribute to the fact, you know, I think that that's all part of good communication that I've talked about. And it, right at the beginning,
yeah.
the parents know what the protocol is for communication, who's getting in and who's there, because that's really
yes.
imperative. If the parents on side and there's everybody working together, have the success for the students automatically.
Right, right. That's one of, I mean, I'm always urging parents to go to that back-to-school night, and that's one of the many things. You can often take the temperature of a classroom if you go to that. How are the paras? Are the paras there at all? Are they being introduced? Are they being respected? Do they seem to be in charge more than the teacher is? You
mm-hmm.
can learn a lot that night about what the dynamics of the classroom is going to be. And I know one year my son was in a classroom that had, I think, three paraprofessionals plus a
oh, wow.
teacher who was coming back from a long time of raising her children, and the power balance in that room was screwed up. It was like one of the worst years he ever had.
Well, I think, I mean, that's something that certainly you don't want to try to, relive and know that it's very painful for parents. And along the way, there have been a few of those for myself and my wife with Lindsay. So, you'd like to try to promote that not happening and try to promote a positive
yeah.
learning app. Because if the relationship is
yeah.
toxic, it does reflect lack of success.
I lost you again.
Yeah.
The other
Are
thing
you there?
I was going to say is that I'm always empowered and inspired because remember that paras are not among the highest paid educators, and I always open that
right.
up with that. And therefore, they are really, they have a special place in their heart for
mm-hmm.
People, you know, students who are marginalized, students who need that extra help. It's that feeling of giving to make a difference in the lives of other human beings that causes me to
yeah.
respect them greatly, again,
yes.
And to make sure that in that one of the ways I can respect them as a principal or just simply as a fellow educator is acknowledge the fact of the value that they have in this relationship as guides on the side.
Right, right. Well, I think that their feeling for the kids is really important, but it's also really important that they be trained because it's really just not enough to want to help and
care. Oh, well,
and
that's what
care.
I said.
They need to know what to
must,
do. And
I
so
said
often
that again. By the National
yes.
Para Conference every year is one aspect, but they need more than that because not all of them can attend. They need to be having professional development just for paras
yeah.
delivered by up-to-date data, up-to-date strategies
mm-hmm.
and techniques from somebody who, first of all, values what they do,
yeah.
wants to help them
sure.
move forward as professionals.
Yes, yes, absolutely, and that's the piece that seems to be missing quite a lot of the time, and I always, feel for individuals having to do that job with just their instincts and their,
their
parenting
coming
experience.
Coming from the top, Terry, that principals, administrators need to understand the role of the para so that when they deploy
yes.
them, they understand their purpose, and that helps the
absolutely.
Administrators to be make more accurate decisions in terms of using their staff.
Wonderful.
Yes,
thank you.
Well,
great
unfortunately,
point.
Yes, yes, that was our school bell saying that we're done for today, but this is a great topic and one that's very near to my heart as well. Thank you for being our guest today, and I would like to
thank our listeners
yes. for tuning into our program this morning. We will be back next week at the same time with guest Susan Marks from the University of Northern Arizona, who is going to talk about including students with autism and training teachers to include students with autism. In the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, where Nicole tweets under the name inclusive_class, and I am at Mamatude, MAMATUDE. And finally, you can download our past podcasts for free on Stitcher and iTunes. Goodbye, everybody, and have a great week.
Goodbye.